What's up, Brainiacs? Hope you're enjoying the podcast. Just a programming note that every Monday at 9 Central, you can join me, Andrew Cieslak, and Josh Custodio for Monday Night Program. Come hang out with us as we continue to build the WBCW universe using Fire Pro Wrestling Promoter Mode. Who should we sign? What matches should we book? Join us for the only professional wrestling program on Monday nights. That's Monday Night Program on twitch.tv/wrestlingbrain.
Comics in the combat zone, comics in the combat zone. Usually we make you laugh, but now we're watching guys get stabbed with light tubes.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Comics in the Combat Zone. This week, talking two shows, CZW South of the Border, June 19th and 14th, 2001, and also CZW A New Beginning, which happened, just give me one second here, Ben, July 7th, 2001, in Sewell, New Jersey, the Soccer Champs Arena. Now, so we've just downloaded all the shows for the year, and I didn't realize what this was when we first queued it up, so I was expecting a show in Mexico with the whole CZW roster. What were you thinking when you saw South of the Border here?
I mean, given its history when it comes to being considerate, I didn't know what I expected from a show called South of the Border.
Yeah, it could have just been a regular show, like with a Mexican in the main event or something.
Yeah, or just like, they're like, we're taking the SATs back.
Yeah. Or just everyone in the show has a sombrero. That's the gimmick for the night.
But then I saw it was 23 minutes, and I was like, oh, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, very odd.
Yeah.
So what it turns out is, and I thought it was only going to be one match, because we get the graphic for Zandig versus Wifebeater right up front. I'm like, okay, this should be a cool 20-minute death match. And why don't we go through the first one here? So first off, the arena looks bigger than any CCW arena we've seen. It looks like an actual arena.
Yeah, it's an actual an actual arena, and it's packed.
Mm-hmm. And by packed, we mean like probably less than 1,000 people, but maybe more than 500. I mean,
definitely the biggest audience CZW's had.
Yeah, which just, I so wonder who Zandig isn't talking to like book this and to like make this happen.
It'd be
Because if it was AAA or CMLL, like we'd at least know it. There'd be the logo there or something. This is probably some Mexican indie league that has paid to have the CZW faithful down there. I mean, anything goes in Mexico. This is not like New Jersey, so there are light tubes abound to begin this match.
Yeah, and it opens with them like unravel, like taking tape off light tubes. You know, it's going to be serious.
Yeah, they sort of face off like it's lightsabers in a way, and they go to war with them. And then I like this. They each break the light tubes in half over their knees, and so now they have like two half light tubes.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
As they breathe in the dust from the light tube powder or whatever, the cancer powder from the light tube.
Yeah.
And then they both take turns swinging and missing a lot. And by the way, there is really no setup here. It doesn't even, there's not a setup to the card. There's no like ring announcer. It's just Wifebeater's out first to, I forget what song he came into, but they just both obviously stole like popular rock songs from the 80s. And then this match just began. So there was no context here at all. Zandig did come out with his world title, so you know it's for the CZW world title, apparently. And it is funny to think, like, as his roster is fighting it out in New Jersey in these weird arenas, Zandig is, like, he's in Great Britain, he's in Japan, he's in Mexico, just doing matches like this.
All lovely places. Apart from GB. But Japan, though, that's why. Yeah, it is crazy. You'd be like, where's my money?
Well, it's just weird because it's like, you know, we see these whole cards go on without Zandig, who's holding the world title. And I assume that he thinks this is better for exposure for the company, because he's sure to yell CZ fucking W every time anything happens.
Yeah, he still, there's some, you can't take that out of him. Yeah. You can take it to a new, we take the...
The man out of CZW.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
But
yeah,
you can't take the combat zone out of the
man. No, CZ fucking, like, they're Mexican, so I don't know. I mean, I can't understand him when I'm English.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So yeah, the match begins with both guys swinging and missing a lot with these light tubes. Wifebeater reverses Zandig onto the apron, then hits him over the head with a tube. But then Zandig hits Wifebeater on the back with the tube, and then Falcon arrows him over the top rope through a table that was just set on the floor that you're not seeing. And it's weird because it feels like the Mexican crowd just, I don't know if they're not used to like death matches in particularly, or just these guys. Because this almost felt like a showcase match for what CZW does. Mm. And so it's very, like, slow-paced and not methodical, because it's not like they really had thought this out.
There's no method to this madness.
Yeah. But everything they're doing just feels like a bit slower, but every bump like really matters. Like the crowd went fucking crazy when Whitefeater goes through this table. And it's only like a couple minutes into the match.
Yeah, this is real American shit.
Yeah. The fans are just shocked here. And then Zandig decides to pull out a barbed wire board, and the fans pop like just as hard as the table bump they've just seen. They're like, oh my God, the barbed wire board. So he throws Whitefeater back in the ring for a feeble two count. Then Whitefeater counters with a power slam and a nut punch, which gets another two count. And the fans were also they thought the nut shot was a bit out of line as well. Zandig powers up, kicking out at one for the nut shot, actually. And then he comes up and hits a spinning lariat on Whitefeater, puts Whitefeater on the top rope, and then tosses him a light tube and elbows it into his face, which looks pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Then he hits a superplex, hangs Whitefeater up on the top rope, hits a guillotine leg drop. It's just all Zandig at this point. He drags Whitefeater onto the apron, lays chairs on top of him, and then hits another guillotine leg drop on the Whitefeater. And then Zandig, he brings in a bunch of light tubes. He lays them on the mat, does just this basic gorilla press. This is what I mean by just slow-paced stuff. Like we've seen this already a bunch in CCW, but you can tell they would just get the same reaction with a basic gorilla press onto, like, two light tubes on the mat. And not saying that that's not brutal. I mean, I wouldn't want to do that. But, you know, we've seen Whitefeater been through so much more that I was almost like, okay, like, it's pretty basic almost.
Yeah, we're used to it. We've adjusted to the trauma. So we're like, we need it to keep escalating.
Yeah. At one point, this is so bizarre. So Zandig makes a tube table, which, if you can imagine, there's two chairs facing each other and then light tubes as the table part. Gets Whitefeater to the top rope, and then this random masked guy just domes Zandig with a tube. And then Whitefeater does a Chokenstein off the top rope through these light tube table that Zandig just made. Because, of course, you know, Zandig set it up, so he's got to go through it.
Yeah, he's got to go through it.
And then Whitefeater grabs the barbed wire board and puts it in the corner, which means, of course, Zandig has to counter him and hits a, like, running power bomb through this barbed wire board, which actually looks just fucking brutal. This weird masked man enters once again, and Zandig goes to hit him with the mother effing bomb, but Whitefeater smokes him in the stomach with this, like, what do they call it? Like a bundle of light tubes, like six of them.
I think that's what they'd call it. Yeah, baker's dozen of light tubes.
Yeah. And then the mask guy falls on Zandig, and Whitefeater just hooks his legs, covering him with the mask man for the win at 9:11, or 9:11, if you will.
Nice.
And the mask guy lifts Whitefeater's arm, and then Whitefeater's like, fuck off, and pushes the guy away. And they never address who this mask guy is. For all we know, he's like maybe a star in whatever indie promotion this is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very odd. And this was this for the world title, you said? I can't remember.
Apparently it was.
Yeah.
And Whitefeater leaves with the title belt.
Yeah, I mean, at least we saw it this time instead of like the like changing off screen and then having to catch up.
Yeah. Yeah, the commentators tell us like, oh, by the way, our world champion lost the title.
It's in Great Britain still. So, okay, nice.
So then we cut, and I'm like, oh, maybe we'll see, like, a Nick Mondo match, maybe, like, Lobo's down in Mexico. And the graphic comes up, Whitefeater versus Zandig again.
Yeah, but they changed the heading, so.
Yeah, so I guess.
Top billing.
And I'm expecting maybe it's, like, either the same night in a different arena or maybe the next day. It's the exact same arena, but it's about, like, half as full. And instead of the dark, because I didn't say that for the last time, these guys were entering in the pitch blackness. Like, you couldn't even see them as they came down to the ring. And instead, all the lights were on this time, which made it look almost like exposing how empty the arena was. It felt like this match was happening in the afternoon. It was very strange.
A matinee performance, yeah.
Exactly. But they still enter with stacks of light tubes. Like, each of them come out with a bundle this time. It's almost like they're going to outdo themselves. And I'm expecting, like, the exact same match we just saw the night before, but they're just going to do it again. But it sort of was a different match. So Zandig comes out, and there's a table, like, right at the apron, and he lays his light tube bundle on it, and he's like, I'm going to fucking put you through this to Whitefeater. And he's like, oh, I'd like to see you try. So he goes to instead of just sliding in, he walks to the other side to slide into the ring, and Whitefeater just breaks his bundle of light tubes on Zandig as he tries to get into the ring.
Yeah, light tubes are awesome.
Yeah, it's a great way to start a match.
It just never gets old.
Yeah. And anyone can do it. That's the great thing.
Yeah, we might do it.
You don't have to go to wrestling school.
No, I'm good. We should. We We should start cracking light tubes.
I would love to do a roast battle where loser takes a light tube
to the head. Yeah, I don't know where on earth in this day and age would like health and safety that. You'd probably have to go to New Jersey to get away.
No, not New Jersey. Delaware.
We'd have to go to Delaware. We'd have to go to Smyrna.
So, yeah, this match begins as there's a chair set in the corner with tubes like sitting on it. Zandig is whipped into this, and then he breaks through the tubes and flies to the outside, Ric Flair style. At some point, fans start chanting USA, not CZW, USA, in this Mexican arena. And I'm like, all right, I guess the CZW diehards like cross.
There's no America, yeah. Yeah.
It's just very bizarre.
Yeah.
They brawl to the outside. His wife beater's in full control. He does that thing where he holds a light tube on Zandig's head and then just smashes it with his fist. Again, it's a very slow-paced match, but the fans are reacting like this is like a big deal or whatever. In the ring,
they're big deals.
They are the big deals, yeah. The hate club. And in the ring, Wifebeater power slams Zandig onto the tube, sort of the same way Zandig did in the last match. But then instead of going for the pin, he puts a tube on Zandig's crotch and just stomps it. I don't know how they fake this. I don't know if it's just like...
No way there is. Unless there's a lobster in there, protect it. Do you remember that? Do you remember when they put a lobster in Wifebeater's pants?
I'll never forget that.
And then, like, killed it.
Like, even a cup, though, I'd be scared of just shards of glass in the nutsack, you know? Wifebeater jumps on Zandig's back, like literally as it sounds, and then like choking him, trying to. And Zandig backs into another set of tubes sitting on a chair. They don't break, so he just picks it up and smashes it on Wifebeater's head. And then Zandig just picks up Wifebeater and gorilla presses him over the top rope through that tube table I mentioned at the beginning of the match. He yells out, CZ fucking W.
Hell yeah.
And then he gets Wifebeater in the ring, Falcon arrows him on another set of tubes for two. And then Wifebeater attempts his finisher, but Zandig kicks him in the gut, hits a spin-out powerbomb, and wins this match at 6 minutes and 20 seconds. I assume this wasn't for the title, just based on what happens in the next match.
Yeah.
But we do end this south of the border viewing with a Zandig win. What did you think of this Mexican outing?
It was fine. Yeah, it was all right. Like, you know, light tubes are always exciting. I don't know. It wasn't particularly engaging.
It was just bizarre. There were, like, no stakes. I say no stakes, but the title changed.
Yeah, no stakes.
It was very strange. I thought it was interesting just knowing what Zandig is up to as his company plods along here in 2001.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this brings us to our main show proper. CZW, A New Beginning, July 7th, 2001, Sewell, New Jersey. Did you put any stock into that new beginning phrase?
None whatsoever.
Well, they usually, like, if they have the name usually mentions something in the show that happens, you know? Like, as we remember, CZW, The Boss is Back. Featured the boss.
Yeah,
coming
the March violence. It was in March and it was violent.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I don't think it was
the Pyramid of Hell.
Yeah. Were people stretched in Smyrna?
Yeah, there was some stretching.
Okay.
They stretched with the name, to be honest.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I just don't know what on earth this would mean because it feels like a new beginning every episode because there's no consistency. Like every single episode, you're just like, oh, I guess this is like a weird soft reset on the entire thing.
Yeah,
so
the booking is such dog shit that every month is a new beginning. But the show opens with a match graphic. I won't say what it is. I don't want to be a spoiler. But I like how it's the background is like classy CZW yellow instead of the like booger green that we're used
to. Yeah, the Nickelodeon, the weird like Rugrats thing. Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, and the announcer first introduces Brian XL and Chris Devine. And I was like, oh, these guys again. It's just a different mix of some of the great matches we've seen recently. And then the SAT music hits, and we get Jose Maximo and Red. And even though I knew this was going to be a pretty good match, I've sort of like, this is the third show in a row we've just seen different combinations of these six guys.
Mm.
And I'm just sort of like, okay, yeah, they'll have a great match, but like none of it means anything. And it's just sort of like.
Yeah, you want to see him go off against other people, I guess, other styles. And like, like you said, and as we said, the SATs are really good, and Red in particular is really good, but often when they're in a tag team, they just do like the same few spots over and over again. They're good spots, but you're just like, okay.
Yeah, I'd love to see Red sort of branch off into a feud with like a Reckless Youth or a Trent Acid.
Pondo.
Or like, yeah, Red versus Pondo would be sick. He becomes a deathmatch guy.
He would kill. I think Pondo would just like, I don't know if he'd be able to take a stop sign to the head.
Well, it does sort of like it highlights this weird thing in CZW where their divisions are very separate. Like the tag division is very separate from the junior heavyweights division, which is very separate from like their main event sort of death match crew. And it's almost like never the twain shall meet. Other than the Briscoes versus Hatred and Gage sort of like crosses over a bit.
A little bit, yeah. But, it was, you know, Gage hasn't done a singles match for a while, I don't think, has he?
No. And none of these are death matches either. So yeah. Yeah, it is just interesting. I shouldn't complain because this goes a lot better than like a Jeff Rocker opener or the God forbid the Rockin' Rebel.
Yeah. Definitely better than goes a lot better than Rockin' Rebel does.
So we get Jose and Divine Beginning as House compares the SAT to Snoop Dogg and Carrot Top.
Very strange comparison. Such a 2001 comparison that.
No kidding. Imagine looking at Amazing Red and being like, he looks just like Carrot Top.
Yeah. And I mean, there's no way to mean it other. Was he like? How did he look back then? Probably all right. Was he Jack?
Carrot Top wasn't like as Jack. No.
No. But okay. So maybe it was derogatory.
But he wasn't like a 5'4" like Latino guy either. So.
Yeah. True. And the Snoop Dogg one is, I guess, just because he's black.
Yeah. Literally. Not even though, yeah. Like,
that is weird. Yeah. It's very
just
strange.
Just because he might smoke weed. Maybe.
Yeah. I guess.
That's what we're going with. So we get a reverse off ending with a Northern Lights suplex by Divine. Then both men tag out as Red and XL, Brian XL tag in. And the crowd is just pumped when these guys walk in. Because they did have that great singles match at the last show. Mm. And again, I'm not trying to like poo-poo it, but I'm just like, I don't know, like these guys are incredible, obviously. It's just like, I wish it meant something or whatever. But they have this insane reverse off. It ends in a double kip up stare down. XL goes for the handshake, but Red refuses to shake his hand. So... what did I say here? Sorry. Oh, yeah. So XL just cleans house on him and Jose. He just starts hitting, like, leg lariats. He hits... I love when cruiserweights are so good. Instead of just regular drop kicks, they'll hit drop salts, where they just drop kick the guy and then do a moonsault for
it's
no reason.
It's pretty cool.
Just flash points, yeah, basically. Yeah. And then he knocks Jose on the outside, hits a huge acai moonsault. This allows Divine to chuck out Red and then dive on both the SAT. The match just picks up pace here and sort of like loses its form as Jose is up. He makes a two chair tables on the outside and then just leaves them. And I'm always like, as soon as something's set up, you know, someone's going to have to go through it at some point.
Yeah. Chekhov's chair table.
Yeah. They start double teaming XL with like their surfboard into the double stomp. The SAT is doing quick tags, isolating Brian XL. And it's funny, like, Red, you can tell why him and Brian XL would be fast friends, because they're both going to be the same guy in the match if they didn't have each other.
Yeah.
Like, if XL didn't exist, then Red would be getting worked over. But because it's him, they can sort of do it. Finally, XL makes his own comeback, but then he doesn't tag for some reason. And then the SAT hit this face buster version of the 3D. It looked awesome for a two count. Jose gets a figure four cradle, which is just weird. Like, he locks in the figure four, and then instead of, like, turning him over, he does this cradle. And you can tell the ref thinks it's a pinfall, but obviously it's meant to be a submission.
Yeah.
So the referee is just confused by what's going on.
Yeah, the referee can't keep up.
No, not at all. Neither could I, to be honest. XL is on the apron. He hits a 180 springboard DDT onto Jose, if that makes sense. Then he attempts to do the same move to Red. They exchange counters before XL hits the exclamation point on Amazing Red, which is a tough move to describe, but he just drops Red on the back of his neck and head.
It looks like an exclamation point.
It looks like an exclamation point. Yeah. And the commentary loses their minds for it every time. Because they should. It looks disgusting and dangerous.
It's gross.
Like, he couldn't do it to anyone else. That's the funny thing. Like,
you shouldn't do it to anyone.
Imagine him trying this on, like, John Dahmer or whatever.
Yeah, no, yeah. His neck would collapse.
Yeah, within itself. Divine is tagged in. He runs wild, hits a huge flatliner on Red, and then Jose breaks up the count. He gets Divine in the corner, but Divine head scissors Jose off the apron through one of those chair tables I mentioned earlier, and Jose's just like fucking out here. Then Divine dives, but the SAT catch him out of midair and then powerbomb him through that second chair table. Then back in the ring, Jose botches his finisher on XL. So they look like lost. He's clearly trying to like hit, I forget what he calls it, what he calls his finisher, but it just doesn't work. And so they look lost, and then he just whispers in Red's ear, and they improvise like a leg drop, Red Star Press at the same time. And the SAT get the win here at 10 minutes and 2 seconds. And it was exactly what I thought it was. It was an impressive match.
Yeah, like, for sure. Very athletic.
Nothing really to it.
Yeah, for sure. You're just like, oh, okay.
Cool.
That's nice.
The SAT.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame they're not involved into something a bit, like you said, more meaningful.
But it's like, who do you pair these guys with? Like the Ratchies? Or like,
oh, yeah, the Ratchies.
That's what you want to see?
Yeah, the Ratchies or, I don't know, Briscoes.
It really is SAT versus the Briscoes, but they sort of gave us that like a few times in a row right away.
Yeah, I don't know. They're almost too good for anyone else.
Mm-hmm. They should just bring in Japanese guys.
Yeah.
That's a, like, take another page out of Paul Heyman's book and just bring in, talk him, although I guess he was in WWF at the time. Anyway, what's the word going on? We cut, and the next match is a submission match. Did this excite you?
Yeah, because I wanted to see some gross stuff. I don't know, I thought I would some see stretching. some, like, you know, a new beginning, a new submission.
Maybe. I thought we'd be in Smyrna here with all the stretching going on.
Yeah.
Out first is the Reckless Youth, because, of course, the guy who's just tapped out the last two shows in a row to Minoru Fujita comes out. He tries to cut a promo. We're treated to the same terrible audio. They just have never figured out the audio here in this arena.
No, not in this one.
The commentary works fine, but yeah, the promos are always shit. He's had it up to here with CZW. he holds his hand above his head.
Yeah.
Show how much he's had it up to. And then just a generic heel promo. And then out comes his opponent, Minoru Fujita, who is always fun. Always just like full of energy, full of life.
Yeah, he's cool.
This starts with just basic grappling, slow pace, technical. And it's weird because they clearly, like, after the first match, were trying to put Rick Blade into this feud. And now it's like, I think Rick Blade's just badly injured.
I think he is injured, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they've not mentioned him. There's nothing.
And this is well over a month after the first match. So it's just been the same match with these guys. And, like, I don't hate Reckless Youth, but I don't think he's strong enough to, like...
He's not good enough to, like, be... like, he's fine. He's not bad. Like, he's workmanlike. And that's not what you want with someone who's can be as explosive.
Yeah, it's just not that compelling. And again, he has to do all the talking because obviously Fujita only speaks Japanese. And you're in front of a racist crowd that probably hates Fujita just because he's Japanese.
Yeah, most likely. But and I'd still rather not hear Reckless Youth speak.
Yeah, I agree. I wish they switched where Reckless Youth tried to speak Japanese and Fujita tried to speak English.
You think that would probably go over quite well?
That would help.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the pace quickens as Reckless Youth gets Fujita onto the apron. Drop kicks him outside of the ring, and then hits an actual impressive tope suicida dive to the outside. Back in ring, Reckless Youth just drops a knee on his groin, but Fujita returns the favor by grabbing Reckless Youth's dick and then drop kicking him to the face. That's always a good defense if you just grab a guy's cock. They won't know what to expect.
No.
You could even jerk him off. Then
sexy,
be really confused.
Yeah, then post nut clarity, like depression, do the job for you.
Yeah, let a man defeat himself.
Yeah, exactly. The greatest enemy a man knows, himself.
Then Reckless Youth fires back with his own dropkick and leg lock, which gets a rope break. And then he does that whole, like, mocking the Japanese sort of martial arts thing, which, again, just gets, like, a babyface reaction from this crowd.
The racism gets a babyface reaction.
Yeah, he should go back to mentioning, like, chopsticks.
He's
and
so
stuff.
Boring, though.
Reckless Youth?
Yeah, even in his racism, you're like, this is so boring.
I don't even buy that you're racist.
No, I just you're so bland.
Yeah, he really is. Just it's weird that his name is Reckless Youth, because I remember hearing that name before I ever saw this guy, and I expected almost, like, you know, like someone who looks like Red, like tiny and just fucking like reckless, like Darby Allin, but like 1990.
Yeah, literally, you want Darby Allin, basically.
Yeah,
you're
and
like
it's
with
just,
a name like that.
This is just a guy you'd like who works at a grocery store or whatever. It's just Reckless Youth has so little charisma.
Yeah, 100%.
It's crazy. Fujita counters an Irish whip into a Boston Crab, which he then leans into his reverse Viper hold, which really is just a silly move. He's beaten Reckless Youth twice with it already, but it's tough to even explain. Like, he can't hold it for more than 5 seconds, so he just has to let it go, even though Reckless Youth doesn't get the ropes.
Yeah.
But it turns into a match where eventually, like, Reckless Youth is working the leg of Fujita, whereas Fujita constantly going for arm bars, and it's just what he does, like, for minutes at a time here. Like, every move he counters, he gets the armbar, and then eventually Reckless Youth grabs his leg, hits a dragon screw, then locks a leg lock. Fujita boots out of the leg lock, hits a huge clothesline, tries a pin, and the referee's like, there's no pinfalls. It's a submission match.
Yeah.
So Fujita,
I wonder if anyone told Fujita.
Do you think?
Yeah, they were just like, they tried to, maybe.
Just submit.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny because he does do this, like, impressive switch from pinning a guy just into an armbar in one fluid motion. So, yeah, again, Reckless Youth takes Fujita to the top, fails as Fujita pushes him off, hits a missile dropkick, and then again locks an armbar to the point where it's getting, like, it got a bit, like, just not lame, but what's the word I'm looking for? It was just predictable. Like,
yeah, samey.
It's like these guys only have one submission each. Like, neither of them are submission wrestlers, really.
Yeah, it was odd. Very odd that it was a submissions match, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, strange. It wasn't particularly exciting to watch. Yeah, we've just seen it a couple of times. Like, we've seen this match a couple of times now, and then it's not even like, it's never been like a banger match either.
Yeah, it's always been just serviceable. And you always think that, like, you know, once you've seen a match, it usually builds up to like a more violent match, like a ladder match or a whatever. And it's like, no, we're going to get more submissions.
Yeah.
Even though we've seen Reckless Youth tap twice at this point.
Yeah.
So Vegeta grabs him around the waist, but he's low blowed. And Reckless Youth hits two Shining Wizards into what they call the Stretch Plum, which is basically just a dragon suplex where he's got the arms bound as well. Vegeta gets the rope break. Then Vegeta hits his beautiful Northern Light suplex into an armbar reversal. It's like this special kind of armbar where he's really stretching his arm out, and the commentators are calling it Taka's Special Number 2. So I guess Taka Michinoku coined this. And Reckless Youth taps furiously at 14 minutes and 16 seconds. Far too long for this match.
Way too long. Jesus Christ.
I was just so bored.
I was tapping out way before then.
And then both men are selling the results of this match, like, down. And Reckless Youth gets out of the ring, grabs a microphone, says, like, I've had a fever all week. Everyone knew I wasn't meant to be booked tonight. He's literally crying, but, like, obviously fake crying because he's not a good actor. And then he's like, on July 28th, we're doing this again. And
Jesus
I was like,
Christ.
Fuck off.
Yeah, no, no, thank you.
I'm done with this. I'm done with Reckless Youth. And knowing his reputation at the time, I'm sure, like, he was one of the higher paid guys on this show.
Really?
I would think so, yeah. He was, like, already, like, an indie legend at this point.
I've heard the name before, so I always thought he was, like, quite good, but after seeing him,
mm-hmm.
No.
Well, if you remember the first time we ever saw him, I think he had a match against Mike Quackenbush, who would be the founder of Chikara.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, a much bigger star at this point. But I think Reckless Youth got a bit of that rub, and, like, people did view him as, like, sort of a... He was never a big star, per se, but he was a big indie guy.
Yeah, he was a name.
And I just don't get it.
I really don't understand it.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this, Reckless Youth, 20 years later, go fuck yourself. And then we cut, and I groan as I see the Ratchies coming out next. I'm beginning to just hate this name.
Like, the Ratchies.
When the commentators say it, I just really hate it.
The Ratchies.
I like Adam Flash a bit, but
I like Adam Flash. Yeah.
I can't stand Danny Rose at all.
No, I mean, I'm an Adam Flash defender.
You always have been.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of the Flash. But yeah, it's just split him up. Just get Adam Flash on his own. He'll do better on his own.
Just fire Danny Rose.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because they come out and the commentator keeps saying, oh, he's a big TV star. I wonder if he'll be tough enough for this match. And I looked it up, and apparently Danny Rose in the first season of Tough Enough, and he didn't last long.
Tough Enough? What's Tough Enough?
It was the WWF or E at this point reality show.
Oh, where they were like, we want to find the next superstar.
Yeah.
Who? What? Did
Maven would go on to win the first
Maven.
One. Maven Huffman. So if you if you know Maven, the reason you don't know him is because he never panned out into anything.
That's not a surprise.
But yeah, Danny Rose is considerably shittier than Maven.
That's wild, that.
And so yeah, if you were wondering what all those references were, they were just references.
Right, okay.
So yeah, I imagine that would have made him a bigger deal on the indie circuit, though.
That he got on Tough Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And if you remember, Adam Flash had a cup of coffee in WCW. So these guys, the Ratchies, are the Ratchies are a big deal.
Yeah, they are for sure.
And it's funny. So out come their opponents, led by Big Mac Smack, VD, as in Eddie Valentine and John Dahmer. Both men just looking generic as ever. They're both out in their spandex. Like, I don't know. There's something. These guys seem considerably lamer than when we last saw them.
Yeah, the comments, I fancy Dahmer. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, the commentators break down their entire history of this feud.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It makes me wonder just what we're doing watching this. Cause
no, I think that every single time I watch an episode.
It's just so much where it's like, first, the Ratchies tried to team with Jeff Rocker. And then they turned on him. And then for the last 3 weeks, Jeff Rocker's been attacking the Ratchies. And I'm just like, holy shit, man. This has literally been going on for like 3-4 months.
Yeah, and it's just... Like, none of it means any... Like, it just doesn't...
None of the matches are memorable.
Yeah, none of... There's not been... Yeah, it's not been a feud I've enjoyed, but it feels like that with most of the feuds in CZW, though, where you just like, you kind of forget they've ever had history when they come on the screen.
Well, I felt for a while the mid-card was on a bit of a roll, and they kept introducing, like, cool, like, better talent. Like, compared to 2000, 2001's been such a better year.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, it's become so complacent, and the booking's just so weak and, like, unoriginal. Like,
after they beat Paul Heyman, they were like, well, we don't need to try anymore.
Yeah, we're already on top.
Yeah, we're the best in the business.
But it just does turn into the case of once you see a match for the first time, you almost know you're going to see it again the next show.
Yeah, it's odd the amount of times they repeat matches. Yeah. Like, and with no real through line. Like, I mean, I guess there's feuds and stuff, but it's just like, I don't know, it's just not particularly exciting.
Well, we're only in July, and I feel like most of the episodes of this podcast have been shows from 2001. So, like, it's just, they do them, like, it's once a week or whatever, where I'm just like, I don't know why they even need to do that. Like,
maybe he's got gambling debts.
Yeah, but he must be losing money on these shows. It doesn't make
sense. Maybe, yeah, true. Or he's, like, gambling on his own shows.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's the ultimate fix. This was before they realized it was all fake, so he's just putting.
How could
it
be fake? They're using glass.
True.
So, yeah, Ed Valentine and Adam Flash begin with just basic, like, a basic wrestling school match. Valentine's in charge of the whole thing. He tags Dahmer, who hits a senton on Valentine, or assisted senton onto Valentine with Flash, and then tags Ed back in. And I was just like, fuck me, man. This is just going so slow and so basic right out of the bat. Finally, and for some reason, Adam Flash is the one getting worked over, even though they're the heels.
Like, yeah.
Then he makes the big tag to Danny Rose, who runs wild with a big release German suplex. On Eddie Valentine, and then they hit the double ratchet slam, which is
the double ratchet
a double choke slam. I fucking hate. What is a ratchet? Do you know?
I don't know. Maybe I should Google it. That what is a ratchet?
Yeah, you do that.
If the first thing that comes up is a famous tag team from
yeah, a tag team that ended in a murder suicide.
Yeah.
Flash sets up chairs outside, and they set Eddie onto the apron and double drop kick him off the apron through a four chair table, which did look brutal because Eddie didn't. He didn't have the balls just to, like, nesty plunge without looking. You could tell he looked behind him and then basically jumped off the apron through four chairs.
Yeah, I mean, none of them are probably particularly good or safe.
No.
So, yeah, doing moves like this, insane.
And then Eddie gets in. He jumps and makes his own comeback. Has a double palm strike on both guys. And then he tags Dahmer in. And the commentator, Eric Gargiulo, is like, Dahmer's about to take him to school.
Yeah.
As Dahmer cleans house with a... He hits a spear on one of the guys, which they refer to as the gore, just taking that from Rhino. Then he hits a spinebuster on Danny Rose. They hit double team elbow and sidewalk slam onto Danny. Then goes for another one, but the Ratchies counter it, leading to a quadruple crossbody with all four guys going for crossbodies in the middle of the road. Did you look up Ratchies there?
Yeah, no, I couldn't find anything.
Wow.
I don't know. I even searched the Ratchies tag team to try and find at least something, but...
Well, fuck.
Yeah.
Then with all four men down here in the middle of the ring, who do you think runs out but one Jeff Rocker, the Ab Rocker, holding a kendo stick. And he goes to, like, attack. He's hitting the guys with a kendo stick. And then all four of the guys just stand up. And I think it's Danny Rose ducks a kendo shot and kicks him in the gut. And then they all just beat the shit out of Jeff Rocker.
Yeah, but it is odd, like, this interruption. Because he doesn't really do anything. Like, he didn't do anything. He just... rolls up, then just gets beat up.
You know, it's like the whole feud has culminated in them beating up Jeff Rocker.
Yeah, and it's like, it's Jeff. I mean, Jeff Rocker was part of the team, I guess, but it's like he's been, like, getting about all over the place with other people and shit. It's very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very weird. They send him packing, and then the two teams tease handshaking. And I was almost, like, ready to write down the time of this match, like, because I thought they were just going to end this match by handshaking and be like, yeah, fuck Jeff Rocker, let's all be friends or whatever. But then the Ratchies, of course, turn on the faces and attack them. And then at the exact same time, Danny Rose powerbombs Dahmer into a pin as Ed Valentine sits out Flash with a pin, and Hartog counts both pinfalls at once at 9 minutes and 1 second. And both teams win here. What a turn of events.
Yeah, very strange.
Or lose, depending on how you look at it.
Well, whoever wins, we lose. That sort of situation. I don't know if it was this match, but the commentators weirdly go off on a rant about referees being brought in from elsewhere.
Like the commentators?
Yeah, yeah, they're just like, you keep bringing people in from other, trying to take Warthog's job. And it's like, what are you talking about?
No, Eric Arjula was accusing John Hitman House of trying to bring in referees to take Warthog's
yeah,
job.
He's like, it wouldn't be hard. I'm like, leave Warthog alone.
Yeah. Well, because like, yeah, they're teasing announcing a winner as Smack Mac is arguing with the Warthog. And then Danny Rose gets on the microphone. He calls out Rocker for being a bitch. He calls himself as a TV star, cuts a promo on the fans, and then challenges Jeff Rocker to a tag match the next show with a partner of his choice. And then Rocker gets on the mic. I don't remember ever hearing this guy on the mic. I'm pretty sure he's cut promos. And he says, I'll be there. And then Smack Mac takes the microphone, and he's like, well, the VD will be there too. So we're going to get a triple tag team match. as this feud must continue.
He always has to get the last word.
Smack Mac?
Yeah, just always has to be the last one to speak.
Even though we don't know what he's saying.
Yeah.
So finally everyone leaves as this segment mercifully ends.
Yeah, this is... The next episode, whenever those is, it's going to be just so many matches that I just don't care about.
Yeah, 16 days away.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll give Zandig enough time to like rethink everything.
Get back from Mexico.
So then out first for this next match... is the Quiet Storm. And then as soon as I saw that, I knew his opponent was going to be Joel Maximo.
Yep.
So they've literally just split up these six men into another two matches. And I just have written here, it feels so stale and meaningless. I it's not that I had low expectations for this match, because I knew it would probably be decent, but I'm just like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, it's very just... I don't know. It's just... When you get into this rut with it, or like, yeah, when it's the usual like kind of inoffensive, nothing really... Like, nothing really is bad about it, you know, so far, the episode, the matches and stuff, but you're just like, I almost want something to be bad.
Yeah.
Because at least that would be, and at least that would give me something to hook me.
Yeah, I miss Lobo just taking disgusting bumps
reason. Something, just someone, just some crazy, what happened to all the skit? Go back outside, they were funny.
Where'd Jun Kasai go?
Yeah, do the skit. Do the skit.
Yeah. I remember when there's so many dumb wrestlers that were just in for one or two matches. I'm trying to remember the guy who's basically like an alt comedian where he came up with like a cake and everything. And
oh yeah, there was weird, and there was a guy who was like wore a nappy and was like King of England, but he had like a French accent or something.
I want more of that at this point.
Yeah, just bring it back, man. At this point, it's so low that I'm just like, yeah, just give me the Apocalypse Boys. Where are the Kingpins, man?
Yeah, where have they been?
Where are the Kingpins?
Yeah, we should look them up.
Yeah, we should do a separate podcast. It's like Serial, where we just find out where the Kingpins are.
Kingpin Watch. So we do get an awesome starting exchange. It's funny because I've set this match up so shittily, but the starting exchange was awesome. They get into a monkey flip off, seeing Storm win, basically. And then he kicks Joel out of the ring and nails an Asahi Moonsault on him. In ring, Joel finally makes his own comeback with just a brutal lariat, like a Brock Lesnar style. Just as soon as he hits him, he's down to the floor. They just continually counter moves, each hitting the odd sort of high impact move, and then the other just gets up. Storm hits a triple fisherman, sort of like Young Bucks style, for two, and then a diving headbutt for two. And the commentator's like, he reminds me of another Canadian wrestler, which of course,
yeah,
the late great Chris Benoit.
Yeah,
I think Quiet Storm ends.
And then it
better.
Was weird that he went, I sure hope he doesn't. Oh, sure, hope Chris Benoit doesn't murder his family.
Yeah,
and he
really
very
that.
Strange that I was like, that's odd. That it's very prescient actually. That like,
John House knows.
Yeah, John. Yeah, in Chris Benoit in the house.
Storm signals for the finish by doing the Chris Benoit throat slash, but he just yells, I'm going to finish him. And then,
like Chris Benoit, that's weird then, because then he goes, I'm going to finish him like Chris Benoit's going to finish his family.
He did yell that.
it's very strange.
Then Yoel hits a sit out driver for a two count. And then he starts with a slower pace, hits a huge Yakuza kick. Storm tries to fire up. He just no-sells it, hits an elbow, but then Joel no-sells that and destroys Quiet Storm with his brain buster. Like, you know, some brain busters are like, oh, cool, that's a brain buster instead of a suplex. This one's like,
oh, no.
Oh, like he snapped him on his neck.
Yeah, that's a brain buster.
Yeah, hits a huge near fall for a two. Joel then misses a Swanton bomb as Storm gets a German suplex with a bridge for two. Joel cuts him off on the top as Quiet Storm goes back to the top, then hits a top rope brain buster, which I'm just a move no one should do. It's just so dangerous.
No, they shouldn't, like, especially in CZW. Like, because that ring is going to not feel nice.
No.
Like, yeah. It's not going to feel... I mean, I'm sure rings don't feel nice at the best of times, but there's a quality level. And back in the day then, 2001,
yeah,
even lower than it is now. So, Jesus.
Just a slab of granite.
Yeah.
But even the Super Brain Buster gets a two count. And then Joel picks him back up, hits like going for a razor's edge, but then flips him into a face buster, which looks sick. Finally, for the win at 7 minutes and 10 seconds. And even though I set it up as just stale and meaningless, this was a pretty fun 7 minute match, I will say.
Yeah, it was okay. Like, I was still struggling to get too engaged with it, but yeah, it was better than the other matches. And I think the shorter length definitely helps with it.
I like when it's just a sprint. Yeah, we're going to send two guys out there that are willing to bump like maniacs.
Because I think when you say it out loud, I mean, it's like with comedy sets where, you know, 5 minutes doesn't seem like a lot. But when you're on stage, it's a lot. Definitely watching this where, like, I think 7 or 8 minutes matches are, like, fine. I think that's enough time. I know it doesn't sound like much, but you really feel it when it's over 10 minutes, I think. Unless it's, like, a main event or like, actually worth it, I think.
Totally.
Yeah, you know, and it definitely benefits from being that length.
Well, and it sort of does when the matches do go that long. It feels like a really shitty comedy show where the guy running it is like, just do as long as you want. And yeah. It's like, no, they shouldn't be allowed to do as long as they want.
Yeah.
Because with 5 minutes, they'll do fine. With 15 minutes, they'll fucking kill the whole night.
They'll have an out-of-body experience. I've had it on stage when you're doing longer than 5 minutes, and I just completely fly off the handle.
So then we cut, and out next for the next one. The announcer introduces Boogaloo. And before we see Boogaloo, I'm like, what could this be? I'm imagining, like, a guy in a clown outfit.
Yeah, something. Yeah, and it's like a juggalo.
Yeah, or a juggalo, something like that. Instead, it's this, like, guy with a bandana and, like, a Superman jumpsuit. He almost looks like a brown Nick Gage, in a way. Like, that sort of was my go-to comparison.
Yeah.
And it's very bizarre. I don't know why his name is Boogaloo.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I mean, it sounds like a slur, but I don't think it is.
No, I mean, it must be his chosen name.
Yeah, Boogaloo. Yeah. Boogaloo. It is a weird name. It's Boogaloo.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Even with your British accent, it's even weirder.
What's the name?
Like Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah, or what's the baddie in Nightmare Before Christmas called? Like Boogie Woogie. Is
called? Boogie Woogie.
Boogie Woogie, yeah. That guy's sick, though. Yeah, but that's what I was thinking of when it said Boogaloo. Yeah, that would be so sick.
Yeah, if it turns out Boogaloo would be a jumpsuit full of bugs.
Yeah, how sick would that be? CZW only.
And his opponent, former CZW champion Nick Burke. And Burke,
you are right. It is very funny to call him a former world champ.
And it's so funny because he has never been further than the main event seeing them right now. Yeah. It's almost like they really were pushing him as like the second of Justice Payne. Sort of, who is like going to come out and like, you know, fight the system. Almost like the Diamond Dallas Page of the WCW force against the NWO. And now he is just like relegated back. They're trying to get him back into his softcore gimmick where he's like anti-hardcore. He's facing Boogaloo in this nothing Boogaloo match.
Yeah, I know. And he keeps trying to get everyone to do yoga. It's really weird.
So yeah, Boogaloo, he starts the match. He hits a basic body slam on Nick Burke. And then he turns to the crowd and asks, who's the man? Just like Nick Gage would. So my comparison, it just making more and more sense. And the commentators are like, why is he why is he playing to the crowd? He's hit one body.
It is very odd.
And then he turns around and Burke locks him into an octopus stretch. Then he hits a basic suplex, basic elbows. It's just all basic. As I write this, John House is like, looks like Burke's going back to basics. It's like, thank you, John House. You get what I mean. This match is just all Burke with a fisherman buster into a somersault leg drop. And then he calls out for the chin lock of doom and locks Boogaloo into a chin lock.
Chin lock of doom.
He yells that, which I thought was funny.
It's just like, of doom means something quite powerful. A chin lock, I don't know, it's just very, very odd.
Well, it's, you know, it's
I mean, chin lock, I'm sure it would hurt or whatever, but chin lock of doom.
It's meant for sarcasm.
Do you think he was being sarcastic?
Yeah, definitely. Well, okay. You know, I imagine if you're doing a chin lock of doom, it would be like you light your forearm on fire and then...
Yeah, something more serious. Yeah, make the chin... Like you've got a gun.
Shoot.
Yeah, that's... Holy now shit. That's of doom, yeah.
But then Boogaloo rakes Burke's eyes, hits a diving shoulder block into a T-bone suplex. So Boogaloo making his big comeback. But then Burke reverses an Irish whip into a super kick, flips him outside the ring. But then Boogaloo enters the ring with a chair, misses Burke, and Burke hits the Burke driver for a two, or no, not sorry, not for a two count, for the win at 5 minutes and 48 seconds. And then Burke grabs the mic and picks up the chair that was in the ring. And he's like, I want to hit this guy with a chair, but I think it's time we go back to soft core. And the crowd doesn't even react.
No.
It's just so lame.
It's lame. And, like, matches like this shouldn't be 5 minutes either. This is, like, a 3-2-minute match. Like,
yeah, but you're saying 5 minutes felt too long.
Yeah, for sure. Like, what is the point of this? Like, it's essentially when they have a squash match or whatever in a show, right? Where, like, we haven't seen Boogaloo before. He comes in, he does a couple of moves, and you're like, oh. And then the wrestler who's, you know, obviously Burke, you know, he's got a name or whatever, then just destroys him, right? And then wins it. Like, it doesn't, 5 minutes too long.
Well, and for me, it's weird because if you, like, let's say you try change a guy's gimmick. I'm going to use the Dudley Boys as an example. Like, when WWF broke them up, or WWE broke them up in 2001 or two or whatever, they tried to give Devon this reverend gimmick, and they tried to give Bubba this, like, different gimmick, and neither of those gimmicks worked. So then when they reverted them back to the Dudley Boys, it felt like this big deal and a big win.
Yeah, Coke's it. They new Coked it.
Yeah, they sort of fixed a mistake. But Nick Burke felt like he evolved past this softcore gimmick.
Yes.
And it did feel like he was sort of on an upward trajectory. So then to try, like, put him back to the old gimmick that sucked to begin with just feels like, oh, man, this guy's aimless and this sort of sucks.
Yeah, because softcore stuff is just not very funny. Like, if you're going to do it, it has to be funny and whatever. Like, I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, he doesn't sell it well.
Yeah, he's not funny.
Plus, we've seen him do a bunch of chair, like,
hardcore. He's a loser.
He's a
Burke.
He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
So then we cut. And out next for the Iron Man Championship match, we see Johnny Cashmere, who comes out to Linkin Park. This is definitely the match with the best music of the night.
Falling in my...
Yeah. Yeah. And Cashmere gets on the mic and you say, you think he's the toughest? I'm the toughest. And the fans hate Cashmere at this point. It's like, they've just done such a poor job of booking him over the last few months where he tried to side with Zandig on the last show.
Yeah,
and
I mean...
Zandig bitch slapped him.
Every match has been for his job. Or some shit. Like, yeah. I don't know. He's just, it is a bit aimless with Cashmere.
Well, even the commentators are like, do you think he'll have a job if he loses this one?
Yeah.
It's like, what, is now every match?
Yeah, every match
is
a job match, yeah.
And then Mondo's music hit, Cut My Life Into Pieces, and the crowd is super hot. And Mondo comes out really hot. They go face to face here. And both these guys are pretty oily and jacked at this point, I will say.
Yeah, Jack.
You can tell, like, they're sliding off each other. Like,
yeah, they're jacking each other off, oily boys.
Yeah, their tits are mushed together.
It's so hot. It got me aroused.
Yeah, so Nick Mondo thankfully had enough time from the last time we talked about him for his back to, like, heal up. Because
I don't know if he did. I think that's why he quit. He's actually never healed up, but he kept going.
So I was sort of excited for this match because...
Yeah, I was.
You know, Mondo, we haven't had a good Mondo showcase for a while. Like, he was forced to wrestle Pondo the last couple of shows, who just can't wrestle.
Yeah.
And Cashmere, at least, is a good wrestler. They have this evenly matched sort of feeling out period to start. They both decide to leave the ring and then start chucking chairs into the ring. Had this chair standoff, and Mondo ducks a chair that Cashmere chucks at him, and then he throws a chair and it just bounces off of Cashmere's head. Then Cashmere turns around and he hits that alley-oop where it's like going for a powerbomb and then throws him over his head instead. And it lands Mondo onto a seated chair. So they're starting to just take bumps here. Mondo goes up to the top rope and then Cashmere follows him up with a chair. And you can tell he's trying to German suplex him onto the chair, but they both sort of just botch it and fall backwards. And so Mondo, trying to save this, rushes into, like, knocking Cashmere down, laying a chair on his head, and then he hits a springboard leg drop onto the chair. And you can tell he just crushes his face here.
Yeah, Mondo, he's just willing to take anything, I guess. But sometimes he's just like, don't do it, man.
Well, no, he hits a move, but it's one of those, he's so quick.
He's so quick to recover
off the botch they just made that you can tell he's almost being unsafe about it.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I don't know. It's just very, yeah, I mean, these are probably not certified chairs that you should be taking to the head or any part of your body, really. So
yeah, so Mondo makes a chair table, and then all of a sudden Hartog starts selling like something is in his eye, which is weird because, like, no glass broke or whatever, And so Brian Logan comes in, and Hart Dog goes to the outside, and I'm like, oh, they must be setting up an angle here or something. But nothing happens, so I think maybe just Hart Dog got something in his eye and was unable to continue.
Yeah, maybe his house is trying to get rid of him.
It's so funny in this, like, a match this violent, like, oh, the referee's
got
to go out.
He got a chair in his eye.
Yeah, something in the eyeball. They wrestle to the side cage areas. Mondo, he gets Irish whipped, and I got to assume they planned it this way, but like out of this whole wall, because it's like a hockey sort of arena around it, Mondo gets whipped into the penalty box door and just flies through the door yeah. without protection at all. Then Kashmir drags Mondo to the entrance ramp. This is the dumbest spot of the match. So you can't see anything because they're in the entrance ramp where guys come out, and Kashmir starts yelling at some director guy to run the smoke machine. And so as the smoke machine is blasting, he's shoving Mondo's face into the smoke.
Yeah, I think that would be dangerous. I don't think that, like, those smoke machines are healthy.
I don't either, but yeah. I mean, it also just looked terrible and was in the pitch darkness.
Yeah.
They get in the ring, and this entire time, Mondo is selling his eyes, like he can't see. So there's this chair table set up from earlier, and Mondo manages to lay Kashmir on the chair table despite, like, being blind. And then he goes to the top rope, still, like, trying to rub his eyes. As Kashmir, like, sneaks off the chair table, like, knowing Mondo can't see him. This was so convoluted and stupid. And so Mondo just goes to dive onto the chairs with no Kashmir there. And Kashmir meets him in midair, or that's what he tries to do, spearing him out of the air.
Yeah, it doesn't...
I see what they were going for, but it was just a step too far.
Doesn't work quite as well as it did in Fast and Furious, where that's how Tyrese Gibson gets saved.
Well, and they're trying to do like a Logan Paul Ricochet sort of meet in the middle thing. Yeah. But they also fuck up the timing, so it just looks weird.
Yeah, Logan Paul is leagues ahead of these guys as well. Yeah. So, you know, it's...
I mean, we're talking about the greatest wrestler of all time.
Yeah, 100% Logan. I mean, he's... make this a Logan Paul podcast. Let's talk about how good he is.
Switch it.
Yeah, switch it up.
Have you had your Prime today? I wish Prime sponsored this podcast.
That would be so sick if out of nowhere Logan Paul was just like, hey, bros, I love CZW and I love your podcast.
Yeah, I wish I could have wrestled, but I was too busy like filming dead bodies in Japan.
That's what he was listening to at the time.
So Kashmir sets up another chair table outside. He gets Mondo on the top rope, and he top rope bulldogs Mondo through the chairs. Just an insane spot here that only Mondo would take, like, face first. He does nothing to protect himself.
Yeah.
They wrestle to the back of those back office areas that we're so used to here in the Sewell Soccer Champs Arena. Kashmir long darts Mondo into a vending machine. And then there's this table that he sets up right in front of the vending machine, lays Mondo on it, and climbs on top of the vending machine. And then he pulls Mondo up on top of this vending machine. So it's pretty high up. I'm trying to, like, how high would you say a vending machine is? Like, taller than the average person.
Yeah, about 6 foot.
Mm.
Just over 6 foot.
Yeah, so they're on top of that together. He goes for another bulldog, but Mondo counters. He gets Kashmir on his shoulders and hits the assault driver off the vending machine through the table. An awesome looking spot.
Yeah.
Gets the win here at 11 minutes and 7 seconds.
That vending machine's real as well.
Yeah.
You can tell the people.
For
in
sure.
I imagine the people in the stadium are like, please, that vending machine is like $1,000. Please don't break it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought it. Well, I guess I never thought of it. But yeah, the vending machine.
Because it would be a rental, I imagine. So like, please don't break it.
I just imagine, would you have thought a vending machine could take the weight of two humans? But I guess so.
Yeah. No, I mean, depends which humans. Pondo ain't. That vending machine ain't surviving that.
Yeah, he would just break through.
Yeah, he'd just break through it.
But then he'd be stoked because he'd have so many free drinks to take.
Oh, yeah, he would. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if I fell into a vending machine, like some weird Goosebumps episode.
Yeah, there is a silver lining.
Yeah, then how, yeah.
You'd live for a while with all the free snacks.
I wouldn't. The amount I'd eat, I'd be gone.
So I think the right man went over here. I do think they have like a long reign in store for Mondo. And Kashmir is just like a... when's the last time he's got to win? Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mondo celebrates with the belt as the staff carry Kashmir to the back. Then we cut as the Briscoe brothers enter together here, looking ready to fight. Cue the tag team champs music as the Dew leads Nate Hatred and Nick Gage to the ring. So much like we said earlier in this podcast, that they're just going back to the same matches we've seen before here. And again, this was a feud that was built up decently, but I just wish they sort of evolved it here at this point. There's no real explanation as to why
Yeah.
the rematch is just happening immediately, other than they don't have anything for these guys.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, which seems weird, because I think you could put Briscoes against anyone, really.
I'd almost like one of those stipulations where, like, we're going to do Jay versus Nick and Mark versus Nate, and if you win both your matches, then you get another title match or whatever with the Do banned from ringside or something. But instead, they just go right back to the match for the tag titles. So, yeah, there's this great reverse-off between Jay and Gage. And I like that I can sort of tell the Briscoes apart at this point. They have made sort of an effort to differentiate them. Gage, there's this great spot where Gage throws him up for a face buster, and Jay just turns it into a drop kick, and both of his feet just land in Gage's face.
Yeah.
Just like a beautiful drop kick. Mark and Hatred tag in next, and then they also have a decent exchange. I gotta say, Nate Hatred might be the most improved guy on the roster over the past like calendar year.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
He went from like immobile to like a guy who does okay every time.
He's come along leaps and bounds.
Yeah. Yeah, before everyone gets involved, Mark hits an acai moonsault to the outside, and then Jay does a swanton bomb to the entire the pile outside. And then they get back in the ring. Jay hits a big tornado onto Nick Gage and then does a big flat splash. Like, Nate Hatred is just laying on the ground outside, and Jay hits a splash from the top rope just flat on the ground.
That would wind you so bad, I think. Like,
both guys would just be like,
yeah,
oh,
you'd
my
be
God.
So, you'd be, I just imagine, like, vomiting just immediately, either one of them.
Yeah, at the same time.
Yeah, just into each other's mouths.
Yeah. And then as soon as Jay gets up off his feet, Gage just comes, like, off camera with a tope, knocking down both Briscoes. So the match is, like, hit a crazy pace just immediately. The duo split off as Gage destroys this wet floor sign on Jay Briscoe. Like, the sign just shatters into a million pieces.
You'd
like,
be devout.
You've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, if you own this arena, you're like, they're never coming back here again.
And then it'd be funny if right after they broke the sign, you just see a guy, like, slip on the floor.
Yeah, break his leg.
Yeah, exactly. And they head to the offices as Mark and Hatred are in the ring having this basic, like, back-and-forth match. Back outside, Jay returns the favor from that wet floor sign, hitting Nick Gage in the head 3 times, just as hard as he can. And you can tell, Gage is the type of guy who would be like, you're a pussy if you don't hit me as hard as
you
can.
Yeah, you gotta do it, bro.
And just destroys this chair. This chair is just ruined by the end of it.
Yeah.
And then we cut away back to Nate Hatred and Mark for like a minute as Nate has him in a like a headlock. And then go back to Jay and Gage, and Gage is just destroying a different chair on Jay's head.
Yeah.
So it's like for nobody, basically.
Yeah. For the love of the game.
The match regains in the ring as Gage hits a choke breaker on Jay. Mark makes the save, but then Hatred comes in and hits a huge lariat on Mark. I do like the Briscoes aren't small guys, but Hatred and Gage just seem bigger and meaner.
They're like monoliths.
Yeah, exactly. They continue to build heat on Jay as Hatred is just dismantling him with all of the power moves he hits. And then he even hits a tilt-a-whirl sit-out face buster, which is just something you wouldn't expect to see at an Hatred.
That's an insane name.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Jay finally hits a neckbreaker on Hatred, but then he's just destroyed with a sky-high from Hatred. And then he tags in Gage, and they just hit another sky-high powerbomb together as like a two-person. And then Jay makes his own comeback again, hits the snow plow on Nick Gage, a move I haven't seen in a while. Shout out Al Snow. And then Mark is finally tagged in. He runs wild. We get a double Briscoe dive to the outside at the same time. Briscoes build this massive chair table. And whenever it's a Nate Hatred match and you see a chair table this big, you know who's going through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly what happens. They just make the chair table. There's no controversy or reversals. And double suplex Nate Hatred through this, like, it must be like 20 chairs.
He's got to go through him, boy.
Yeah, he needs those chairs. Just eats shit. Jay is in. He gets brainbustered hard by Gage as Do casually just puts a table into the ring. Gage climbs to the top rope, but he's cut off by Mark, who hurricane runs Gage through a chair table set upside. But then in ring, Hatred catches Mark out of the air, who's trying to do a moonsault, hits his sit-out tombstone, the Rikishi driver. And then he makes a table ramp, which we haven't seen in months here.
A return of a favorite, return of the king.
Yeah, I love the table ramp.
We love it. We're officially, I've never said different.
And Gage hits a casual superplex on Mark through the table ramp for the clean win at 15 minutes and 46 seconds.
Yeah, good match. Justified length. There we go, 15 minutes.
Great match. But it's just sort of like, again, all right, so now the heels have won twice. And
they're going to have to do it again. There'll be a three-call.
Well, and the first one was like the dude fucked the Briscoes, but this one was just clean.
Yeah, you can't ask for more. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, okay, I guess we're just not crowning the Briscoes, but we will probably get this match again as well.
Yeah, I mean, you probably will get it again, and it's, I don't know, just I want, they're not doing anything different with these wrestlers who are very talented. I guess because you kind of know, maybe at the time, well, they know because they had that banger match, so you know how talented they were.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
well, I would have like gotten more into it if they just. There was, if even if the Dew fucked them again,
yeah,
and then it's like, okay, we need to have a match without the Dew. But this was just like, oh no, the heels just won. And
yeah.
That's it.
GG.
Good game, guys.
Yeah.
Maybe do the SAT versus Gage and Hatred. That might be
yes,
cool.
Yes. Let's
three
go.
On two. Fuck it. Or throw the Dew in. The SAT versus Hatred.
Yeah,
Gage
he used
and
to be a wrestler.
Dew.
He can come back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot.
He had a run.
Yeah, he is tall. We cut. And the best music of the company begins as Trent Acid. You think he's coming out, but he's introduced by Zabar the Superstar and the ultra-violent Towel Boy. You remember the Towel Boy? And they come out both looking oily, and they sort of point to the entrance ramp as Trent Acid in his Matrix coat.
Yeah, he looks so sick.
He does look
sick.
He's
so hot.
All three guys are dancing.
I'm dancing. We're all dancing.
Well, I was dancing as well, watching this on the train. Yeah. Just fucking.
Damn, grieving.
Acid, apparently not booked tonight, comes out and grabs the mic, and he's like, there's a certain fat turd in the back here who thinks he's better than me.
There's so many of them.
He's specifically talking about Ruckus. And he's like, apparently...
Is that racist?
I don't think so. I was like, I think he would call anyone that.
Yeah, he probably would call me a fat turd. Rest in peace.
And so apparently... He Ruckus claims he was screwed at Best of the Best, which, if you remember, was a show where Juventud Guerrero was meant to be in the opener.
Oh, yeah.
But
his
plane was late, so they just put Ruckus in the match, and Ruckus won. And then Juventud showed up, and they were like, all right, you're out of the tournament, buddy.
Yeah. So he actually was screwed.
Yeah, it wasn't screwed in like a kayfabe term. It's more like management was like, sorry, we paid this guy to be here. So it's bizarre. I don't know why they didn't make that a triple threat in hindsight.
True.
But yeah, eventually Acid decides, you know what, Ruckus, you want to face me? You're going to have to face me and Zabar. And this is going to be a three-way dance. So it's Ruckus versus Trent Acid versus Zabar. And they do that thing that Acid's done a few times where they go to ambush him by the entrance ramp. So the Towel Boy and Trent Acid are like waiting by the entrance. So Ruckus, of course, like the genius, knows this is coming. And he rushes through the back of the arena, enters the ring, and destroys the Towel Boy with his tilt-a-whirl face.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's. I love when a guy's way bigger than a guy and just isn't safe with him.
Yeah, because Ruckus also is just insane.
Like, yeah,
his mass to gracious ratio is off the chain.
Oh,
so yeah,
I'd love
it's
to
wild.
See a, I'd love to see the graph.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
The heels, though, immediately begin beating Ruckus with chairs. They start double-teaming him, but he ducks a chair shot, hops on the apron, and then bulldogs Acid into a seated chair, which looks great. In the ring, Zabar eats a super razzle-dazzle. And by super, I mean Ruckus threw a few other flips into this. And, like, he does his regular handstand and then just does a standing backflip.
He's added like, to it. He just keeps adding to it. It's like in Tony Hawk when you learn how to switch.
Yeah.
So you keep the combo going.
Yeah, so destroys Zabar, and then Towel Boy Irish whips Ruckus into a missile dropkick from Acid, which looked great. This is just a 3-on-1 match, by the way. Like,
yeah.
Even the Towel Boy is like not admonished at all for being involved.
Yeah.
Zabar actually hits a Falcon Arrow on Ruckus, which the commentary refers to as the Dirty Sanchez, which I guess Zabar is calling this.
Yeah.
And he sets up for Trent Acid's bad trip onto Ruckus. Acid signals for the Yakuza kick, but Ruckus ducks and then hits the Parker on Acid, then hits a sky-high powerbomb on Zabar, goes for the standing corkscrew, but Zabar dodges out of the way. They hit a double blue thunderbomb on Ruckus, and then Bar is left to work him over as Ruckus DDTs Bar, but then Acid hits another blue thunderbomb on him. So as soon as Ruckus gets going, he just eats shit from these guys. They drag Ruckus out onto an insane chair table on the outside. It's like another like 8-chair table. And then Acid is getting on the microphone and starts talking shit, like, during the match. I guess he just took this from The Rock. I don't know. And Acid is preparing for his bad trip, but Ruckus pops off the chair table, jumps onto the apron, and just throws Acid through it. Acid just eats all these chairs. They get back in the ring, and Zabar attacks, and he actually hits Ruckus for the crossroads. Just, like, I guess channeling Cody Rhodes here, like, a decade and a half early. Goes
There's
on.
There's actually three royal families.
Yeah, the bars.
Yeah, the bars. Yeah, yeah.
Zabar goes on the top rope, completely misses a moonsault, and then Ruckus hits a Death Valley driver, setting up for a brutal 450 splash on Zabar. He doesn't protect him at all.
No.
He squashes him.
Like, he should pop like a watermelon or something.
Yeah,
like,
his head should
fly. Yeah, it's just insane. Like one of them bloody, you know, the beat 'em up robots or whatever, where it's boop. Like, it's
yeah,
insane.
Yeah. And this gives Ruckus the win at 10 minutes and 3 seconds. And then Trent Acid immediately enters the ring. Yakuza kicks Ruckus and pins him at like 10 minutes, 7 seconds, because apparently it's an elimination match. But then the announcer gets in the ring and he's like, this was not an elimination match.
That's so sick.
Yeah. So Ruckus actually did win.
Yeah.
Even though we've just seen him like lose technically. But whatever. I'm not arguing. And then Ruckus gets on the microphone. I want to say for the first time. I don't remember hearing him talk.
I haven't heard him speak. No, he's like yelled a bit out and about. But yeah, I don't think he's ever like cut a proper promo.
And he's like, I said, now I'm the greatest junior heavyweight champion of all time.
I like your accent.
That was my Ruckus accent. Yeah. And yeah, so I guess this feud must continue.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good match. I'd like to see them like face off one-on-one, to be fair. I think it could be.
Totally. I'd like to see a lot of Acid's matches sort of drop the whole Zabar shtick.
Yeah, because like Acid's seriously a good enough wrestler to just carry a match by himself. He doesn't need all this extra shit.
When he is doing the whole franchise player like Shane Douglas, or like what Triple H would later do, where all of his matches sort of need the interference, but I don't think they do. And
no,
I just wish
not.
I just wish he would be competitive. Sort of like he was in Best of the Best.
Yeah,
Although there was a lot of bullshit in there as well. We get our cut, and then out next for the CZW World Heavyweight title, represented by The Hate Club, it's Justice Payne, looking juicier than ever.
Juicier, oilier.
He's got the Brock Lesnar traps, where
Better,
his shoulders
stronger,
have
faster.
That extra muscle
yeah,
on top.
He's juiced, boy.
He looks huge.
Yeah. Justice Payne.
Oh, how do we never think of that before? Yeah. Apparently, Wifebeater is the champ because Mexico, I guess. But even though, like, we saw him win the first match and then Zandig win the second. I don't know why they showed us those matches in that order.
Yeah, I guess the second one wasn't. Or yeah,
I guess the
very
first
odd.
One happened later.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, whatever. All we know is that Wifebeater is the champ here. And then out comes Wifebeater with Big Mac Smack. Wifebeater's got the title on his waist. He's eating a giant bag of crisps.
Hell yeah. I love that he does that a lot. He's just always eating crisps.
It's always so. Remember after it showed him after the match where he's just covered in blood?
Yeah,
crisps.
And just eating crisps and just
probably
dribbling
getting, like, salt in his
crumbs.
Wounds.
Yeah.
So the camera's cut to the entrance where Zandig and Nick Mondo are just sitting on chairs. And Zandig's like, hey, Justice, you honestly think I would just lose my title to Wifebeater? I let him beat me in Mexico. Which just like. The grand plan was for, instead of Justice Payne to get his match against Zandig, he has to face off against his own partner. And he's like, Wifebeater.
That's such a weird, like, if that was the plan, just drop the title. Just give it to, you don't have to, like, go, like, wouldn't you just let
you
yourself
go
get
to Mexico.
Pinned immediately? Yeah, if that was the plan, then you're like, yeah, I took, like, all this. It's like, why would you do that, bro?
It's stupid. This whole thing was fucking stupid for sure.
Or just stipulate that you have to face Wifebeater first. Like, what? You can do that, mate.
Yeah, you are the owner.
Yeah, you do that all the time. You just invent stipulations.
Well, and it also just bastardizes his title. It's like, that's how worthless it was to you.
Yeah.
Like, just, I don't know.
Former champ Nick Burke.
Yeah. So as soon as the bell rings, Kashmir just enters and attacks Wifebeater with a stick, hitting him in the knee. So Zandig rushes the ring. He gets Kashmir up for the mother effing bomb. When Trent Acid enters the ring and Yakuza kicks Zandig cold in the face, the backseat boys are back together.
This genuinely, I popped.
Me
like,
too.
I thought it was like great. Actually, I was like really surprised. And like the episode so far,
they had teased it.
Yeah, but I think like yeah, they teased it and like done a bit, you know, back and forth. And the episode so far had been kind of mid, in my opinion. But like this was genuinely like. Potentially new beginning. Maybe new beginning was just because like this felt for the first time they'd actually done some long-term storytelling. They were booking for the future. This was actually quite exciting storyline.
I agree.
I was like, oh man, that's sick.
Well, and this whole final segment is definitely where they took the new beginning name
yeah,
from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because this whole thing continues. So the Backseat Boys are about to hug. As Mondo comes in to attack them, they stop hugging and hit the one-hit wonder on him, which is basically like a powerbomb neckbreaker. Then Justice Payne, out of nowhere, picks Wifebeater up, who's still limping from this knee attack, hits the Pain Thriller on him for the win at 1 minute and 23 seconds, and new CZW champion, Justice Payne.
Perfect length for a CZW match.
So the Backseat Boys and Justice Payne just continue the attack on Zandig, Wifebeater, and Mondo. As the fans are saying, Justice Payne has turned on Wifebeater. He's been planning this all along. This is the part I hated about this, is immediately Justice Payne and the Backseat Boys are cast as the heels. And now we're meant to believe Zandig Mondo and Wifebeater are the faces.
He's painted himself as all part of his plan.
Which is just horseshit. Because even Eric Gargiulo is like, this is disgusting what Justice Payne's doing.
Yeah.
And John House is like, I've always hated our boss. And I know they're playing it up, like their roles and stuff, but it is just fucking stupid.
I hate our boss. What's he done for us?
I really didn't like this part of it. I just thought it was just terrible writing overall. But the segment was okay, so I'll give it a pass. Justice Payne continues promoing as the Backseat Boys are just smoking all three of these guys with chairs, not letting them get up. The three winners hug. Gargiulo's calling them sons of bitches. Smack Mac gets in the ring to confront Justice Payne. He's like, what are you doing? And Justice Payne just bitch slaps him, which the crowd boos because I guess Smack Mac's a sentimental figure. And then as the newly formed heels, Justice Payne and the Backseat Boys leave, Zandig gets on the mic, calls them all gay, making sure now you know they're heels.
It's not really a new beginning.
New
boss, same as the old boss.
I love that's how you know they're the bad guys. He's called them gay now. And then he calls for a handshake with Wifebeater. And Wifebeater's like, I don't know about that. At least Wifebeater doesn't just like, okay.
Yeah, immediately take it.
So he's like, but you know what I said, Wifebeater? It's always been about Justice Payne. He's used you to get to that title. And now you're yesterday's news. And Wifebeater's like, you're right. So they shake hands, and Gargiulo's like, the earth just shook. this unholy alliance between Zandig and the Wifebeater, which is a hell of a tag team, those two.
Yeah, that is powerful.
That is the beefiest.
Yeah, I can't
tag
wait
team
to see who goes against them.
And Zandig announces next week in Smyrna a 6-man tag team match. Nick Mondo, Zandig, and the Wifebeater versus Justice Payne and the Backseat Boys.
I'm looking forward to that.
That should be great. Yeah. Ultra violent rules. Anything goes.
Oh yeah, baby.
CZ fucking W. And that is the end of our show here. 2 minutes and 12 seconds, I should say, which is about 1 hour too long.
Yeah.
But yeah, what do you have this one rated here, Ben?
Upon reflection, probably a 1.25.
Yeah, I was right around there. I put 1.5 because the early matches were good, especially the SAT ones.
Yeah.
The tag match was really good.
I don't know. I just like...
The bad wrestling was overshadowed by the nothingness and the meaninglessness.
Yeah, it's like when you eat... if you like something and you have it over and over, like, you still like you can still appreciate it, but you're like, okay, let's try something new.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew all this... It was good, but I'm just like, let's change it up a bit because I was getting a bit bored. Like, I think feeling a bit disengaged with it, but hopefully it was quite an exciting end for me. I'm looking forward to seeing that. So hopefully now moving forward, we can get some interesting changes and some gosh darn wrestling.
Well, and it's also like every time I see the Sewell Soccer Champs Arena now, I know we're not going to get crazy glass and we're not going to get ultra violent spots. So I'm sort of just done with this arena as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long they stay there.
Yeah, and I'm much more excited for the next Smyrna show.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought this one was just sort of shitty booking, sort of shitty writing, some interesting stuff. But overall, just more generic and sort of complacent than anything.
Yeah, and they've got a decent... The annoying thing is, like, it feels like they've got a half-decent roster now.
Mm-hmm.
If they could actually just book things in an interesting way, I think they could have some banger stuff.
They're always just a step away from greatness.
Yeah.
Well, hey, that is another episode of Comics in the Combat Zone. Thank you so much for listening. I've been Jordan Ducharme. Follow me at FunnyJordanD on Instagram and Twitter.
And I'm Ben Stead. I'm at Pink Hoverboard on Instagram.
Thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends all about the wrestling brain. And we'll be with you back again next week.